Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back Show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we believe that intimately connecting with yourself, your significant other, children, family, friends, business networks, community, and your higher power can elevate your life to work towards a positive future. Thus, we explore intimate topics, inspiring life stories, spiritually, and insightful tips on strengthening relationships. This show is hosted by Dr. April, a Florida-licensed mental health counselor, relationship and intimacy therapist. Check out past shows on Apple iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Now, let's get this episode of the Bringing Intimacy Back Show started, because we share with you the secret power to intimacy to create a life you love, or love the life you create. Now, here's your host, Dr. April.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back Show, where intimacy is real. Well, today, guys, you know, I have a very special guest. You know, many of us are in relationships and we're trying to figure out, well, do we love the man? Do we hate the man? Do we stay? You know, what kind of relationship is this? You know, how did I end up here? Just all this kind of stuff. Where do I go from here? Well, guess what, guys? I have someone who is an expert in the field, who knows about relationships, not only through her practices, but she also has written a great book, which just came out, and it's called I Hate the Man I Love, A Conscious Relationship is Your Key to Success. It's available through all the Amazon and a variety of things. So let me welcome the person who I'm talking about. Welcome, Joan Childs.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Yes, yes. So like I said, Joan is the author of a book here, and I will give you guys some more information about that. But she's been in private practice since 1978, and she specializes in couples therapy. She's known as an encounter-centered couples therapist. Your office, I believe, is in South Florida, if I'm correct. Yes. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, she provides 2 to 5 days intensives, 2 days intensive for couples. She's appeared on many, many national shows, including Oprah Winfrey. This is actually her third book. She's the author of The Myth of the Maiden on Being a Woman and Why Did She Jump, which talks about her daughter's battle with bipolar. So, Joan, welcome. Congratulations on your third book.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. So, of course, everyone's thinking about, well, where did you get this title? And what even inspired you to write this book?
Well, that the book, the birth of the book came right out of my private practice. And like you said, I'm 1978, which makes me a dinosaur.
You look wonderful.
More than 42 years now, and I'm still in it.
Yes.
When women would come in sometimes with or without their partners, I would hear them shrieking, I hate you, I hate you, or I hate him, he's a jerk, he's things that I can't say on the air right now. But the vitriolic words that came out of their mouth and the stomping and slamming doors and taking their Prada bags or their Gucci bags and throwing it over their shoulders and just yelling, I'm done. I hate you. You're an idiot. You're a jerk and blah, blah, blah. That happened so many times. It was almost like a recording of women's voices that were frustrated. Let me turn that off. Wait one second.
That's okay. But when she comes back, she's going to go into more information. And in this book, she does talk about a variety of couples or individuals or women who may have entered in a relationship, whether it's been 6 months or 5 years. They get very, very, very frustrated with their partner when they come into counseling.
Oh my goodness.
All the time. And so that's what she's explaining. Yes.
So what happened was when they would come in sometimes privately, they would say, I hate him. I'm done. I said, well, why are you with someone that you hate? Well, because I love them also when they're not a jerk and when they're available, emotionally available, and when they're present to me, I love them. So I realized that that's a great title for a book. Okay. I Hate the Man I Love, because we can and often do have oppositional feelings that coexist simultaneously, not just with our partners, but with our children. Our children have it with us. We have it sometimes with friends. So it's part of the human condition to have a love-hate relationship at times. It's not that you really hate him. It's you hate some of the behavior, but it feels like you hate him. So the book was born out of my office and the women that, and the, even the men. I mean, men have the same feelings, but I really kind of targeted men. But I will say this, April, please let your audience know that this is not a male bashing book and that men can learn more about how to have a co-create a conscious relationship with their partners. That's how it was born.
Yes, yes, definitely. And when you're reading the book, and I'm glad you mentioned it's not a men-hating book at all. It's a book that provides insight. And one of the things, since we're starting this off, you talked about, you know, I hate the man I love. But in the beginning part of why we choose someone, you mentioned in the book, which is a lot of times have to deal with how we were raised.
That's right. And we unconsciously choose a partner. And I say it unconsciously. That will eventually give us the biggest nightmare of our lives, only to help us resolve unresolved conflicts from our wounded childhood. And then we hire them to do just that unconsciously, and then we end up firing them for the very reason we hired them. That is the whole thesis of the book, how we drag our wounded childhood and the things that the dysfunctions of our early life into the present and into the future. And that's really the essence of the book and how to clean up the polluted space that we live in, which is the relational space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many people sometimes think about their childhood. That has nothing to do with my relationship. You know? Yeah. Yeah. When you ask the questions, you know, how did you grow up? Why are you even asking that? And so you're even stating, and even for couples who are out there, maybe they're struggling, and you have kids watching, of course, what's going on. The importance of childhood.
That's right.
Yes, yes, yes. And how that affects these, how you see yourself and how you choose your partner.
Yeah, we only know what we know. So our role modeling as children serve as the way we follow through. The same, we only know what we know. It's just a very natural thing. And doing what comes naturally is not necessarily healthy.
Right, definitely. And so with that and with these people with childhood issues, do you address that later on in therapy?
Oh, without a doubt. That's the essence of the work I do.
Okay.
To heal the inner child in each of us, because if not, we end up having a 3-year-old marrying a 4-year-old and they can't make a functional marriage out of that. So okay. Absolutely, it's part of the process, without a doubt.
Okay. Okay. And so since we're talking about your process just a little bit, what is the essence of your therapeutic approach?
Well, it's a culmination of many, many modalities that I have used over the years, and I've created my own. There is no real agenda when people come in and they want to know what do I have to do? It's like, well, let's see. Let's see where the road takes us. It's very, it's natural. It's organic. And it's spontaneous, but it's the utilization of many of the greats and the near greats, starting with Virginia Satir way back when she started with family and marriage and family therapy, utilizing her work, and all the way through Imago therapy, which then became, which is what I'm doing now, encounter-centered transformational therapy. They changed the word to transformational, because it is, it's totally transformational. I was the first associate affiliate for John Bradshaw back in 1989. And while he was doing all that wonderful work for recovery, he was dealing with inner child work, and he did relationship work too, maintaining and creating healthy relationships was his beginning. And then I forward fast to Morris and Lewis Gordon, who did the pairs work, which was practical applications for intimate relationship skills, which was a wonderful modality. Took that, I was certified in that. And then from there, I went to Imago. And then from Imago just a whole bunch of people got. They were all part of the stew. a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we came up with what's, depending upon who's sitting in front of me, I utilize what I think is important in the moment. Okay. But the inner child work is incorporated in couples work, because what's happening now that's causing stress, I take them back to the first time, the original pain. When do you remember? What's the first picture that you get when you felt this way? And within moments, they go right back to it. Yeah.
We have I was just thinking, for some of our audience who's out there listening, and we're saying inner child and inner, you know, things that happen in childhood, and people are like, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Can you share just a tad bit of a story in your, I mean, you have beautiful stories in there of couples, you know, a woman who's had some childhood stuff, and how that impact her relationship.
Well, just for an example, I think I talked about, I think it was in the third chapter, that I talked about the power of the penis, the pocketbook.
Yes. Yes.
Patriarch. And I've had several women who I've seen over these 42 years plus who are very addicted to powerful men, rich men, powerful men, men, you know, celebrities. And most of them that were interested in the lifestyle, the money, a lot of them had inner child issues around scarcity, never had enough, and feeling inadequate and feeling not self-worthy, self-esteem issues were low. And they always felt somewhere on an unconscious level, even though many of them were very, very bright, very intelligent, they always felt they really weren't whole without a man. And it wasn't just a man, it had to be somebody that was, you know, that really was substantial. And they ended up marrying men, not for real reasons of love and what really matters, what's really important, but for the money, for the power, because it made them feel safe and secure. These are women that never had a secure attachment. And so they're looking for love in all the wrong places. And they end up, and there's always a younger woman, there's always a prettier woman. And so they get used and abused. And they keep repeating that pattern of, and this is just one instance. This is about women that are attracted to powerful men. But there are women that are attracted to other kinds of men, the bad boys, so to speak. Mm. And it all goes back to the beginning, the original pain. So that's why it's so relevant and so necessary to go back to the child that lives inside of us. And I'm not the only one that does that. Walt Disney did a great job too. So.
Okay. Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned it's also you mentioned about conscious and unconscious. And I think sometimes a lot of that childhood stuff is so in the unconscious.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. And then as your book is titled, it's about a conscious relationship. What is a conscious relationship?
Well, you kind of said it in your right in the beginning of your show. It's to really have a connection, starting out with a connection of yourself.
Right.
Have a relationship with yourself. Who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose in life? And what about my shadow side, the dark side of me? Am I aware of it? Do I embrace it, or do I defend myself all the time? So to get to know yourself really is important before you can really have a relationship with outside of yourself. So that's part of it, to have an awareness and attunement to within. Then you can have an attunement to a partner. But until then, you can't. Getting to know your shadow side is very important. And each partner, not just mine, but who I'm with also. That's the that is really the essence of a conscious, to have awareness, to have attunement to myself and to my other.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. And you do mention it in your book also about knowing yourself, because I think when you know yourself, you can take responsibility.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. And if you don't know yourself, you're in big trouble, because then what happens, you start using defense mechanisms in your communication, and you either blame the other person, you criticize, you find fault, are judgmental, you become contemptuous, all the things that John Gottman talked about in his work, which were the, what he called them, the four horsemen.
Four horsemen, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have to really be able to say, if you make a mistake, if you've done something wrong and you're being called on it, all you have to do is look at it and say, well, what did I really do that? And own it and just say, I'm sorry. It's so easy. Two words. And parents need to do it to kids too.
Yes, yes.
Rather than try to punish them, if they can see that they're a part of the equation, they're involved in the relationship. To have relational maturity, you have to understand that the relationship does not live in each of the partners. It lives in the space between them. Mm-hmm. That relational space that's become polluted over time has to be cleansed. And that's mainly the essence of my work. You know, we are hardwired. Our brains are hardwired for connection. So when we go into a disconnect, we go into crisis. And the brain is the only organ in the whole body that cannot self-regulate. It always needs another brain to regulate. So that's the importance of connections. And the connection is the whole goal in doing therapy with couples. But you have to go back to the childhood to find out how they got to where they are.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that connection that you're talking about and how to strengthen it when it's been destroyed or damaged by each person or also by the couple itself. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Joan Charles about I Hate the Man I Love.
Thank you.
Are you wanting to feel empowered, loved, secured, respected, and inspired in these uncertain times? If so, Dr. April, a licensed mental health counselor and relationship and sex therapist who specializes in intimacy, can help you. Whether you are in need of insight and skills to work through a struggling relationship through couples counseling, or to understand your anxiety or depression in individual counseling, or to figure out your life goals in coaching, Dr. April's compassion and expertise can assist you in these areas. Also, she provides services for emotional support, animal documentation, supervision, and workshops. In addition, Dr. April has a group practice called Cape Coral Therapist. Cape Coral Therapist has an awesome team of male and female mental health therapists, all specialized in various areas including mental health, Christian counseling, trauma, addiction, immigration, and sports counseling, and are ready to serve you. The Cape Coral Therapist team, which is rated 5-star on Google reviews, is known as the Dream Team because of their energy and passion for therapy and determination to provide you with effective and solution-focused counseling for you and your family in a safe and confidential environment. For more information on how you can schedule an appointment in person or virtually with Dr. April or any of the therapists at Cape Coral Therapists, please call 239-565-6921. And you are welcome to visit Dr. April's website, www.draprilbrown.com and www.capecoraltherapists.com. You can follow Dr. April on LinkedIn at Dr. April Brown. You can follow Cape Coral Therapist on Facebook at Cape Coral Therapy. Just remember, Dr. April and her team of therapists and resources can help you strengthen your intimate connections with yourself, your loved ones, your community, and your higher power.
Welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Show, where intimacy is real. And on today's show, we are talking about relationships. Relationships for some people where they're struggling, where they feel like, oh, do I love them? Do I hate them? I don't know how to go about all this. Well, we have a wonderful, wonderful licensed clinical social worker who has been in the field for a long time, has a lot of expertise in relationships. Her name's Joan E. Charles, and we've been talking about her latest book, I Hate the Man I Love, A Conscious Relationship and Your Key to Success. So welcome back. Joan, as I was thinking about all what you said in the last segment, so now we've talked a little bit about people and they have all this inner child work to do. But my next question are going to it. It's like if I'm in a relationship and it's coming out, I don't know what to do. And you say it's easy to take ownership. But how easy is that? And how can we start to bridge that gap through the use of the book?
That really also depends on the relational maturity or the maturity of the person and the understanding that there are issues or conflicts, internal, intra-psychic as well as interpersonal, that have to be resolved. That there, if you look at yourself, I think it was Socrates that said, "A life unexamined is not a life worth living." Mm-hmm. So the question is, do you want to explore? Because some people have patterns; they keep repeating the same thing over and over again, and they never stop to look at why do I keep picking the same kind of partner, the same kind of man? And they're in their 40s or 50s when suddenly a bell goes off and says, "Well, maybe it's something that I need to look at within myself." Now, I do have people that come in much younger and that are more aware that they have issues. Maybe they came from alcoholic or drug families where the dysfunction was so loud that you couldn't miss it. Or they were abused either through neglect or through physical abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse, intellectual abuse, spiritual abuse, all the abuses. And they really can realize that they've been really, they're disadvantaged. They've been disenfranchised from what they really need to know about themselves. And there are others where it's more innocuous or more subliminal, where they really don't have, I'm typical of one of those, where I came from a very high functioning family for the most part. I received a lot of love, a lot of attention. And I was given a lot of support to become the person I was intended to be, with one exception. When I was a little girl, I wanted a doll, a bridal doll. Uh-huh. All I cared about was this bridal doll. My next door neighbor had it, and she was kind enough to let me play with it for about 10 minutes, and then she wanted it back. And I wanted that doll the worst way, and my father said, it's really not practical. You need something that's going to be more useful. I was 5 years old. But for 3 years, I thought about that doll. And finally, when I was 8 years old, my father took me to Macy's. I would come from New York. And I was so excited because I knew the doll was there. And I knew exactly where it was, what showcase, what floor. We took the train into Penn Station, and we walked across 34th Street, walked into Macy's. And I saw that doll as soon as I walked in. I could see it on the right-hand side of the first floor on a showcase with lights. And each doll had a different color. There was a brunette, there was a blonde, there was a red. I wanted the blonde with the curls that cascaded down her shoulders. And as we walked by, he was holding my hand. And I said, I want, that's it, Daddy. That's it, the one in the middle. And he's pulling me towards the elevator. And once again, he said, "I'm going to get you something for your birthday that's much more practical." He took me up to the eighth floor. And he said, "Here it is." And it was a 80 bass green chartreuse accordion.
Accordion. Oh my gosh. What a disappointment to a little girl.
And that became my nemesis. And it was, it isn't that he didn't love me, but he had loved me his way.
Right.
And I didn't get to become the person that I was intended to be. I had to live out his assignments. Well, it's a very innocuous kind of abuse. You can't really say I was abused. I had almost everything that anybody could want. We were very poor, by the way, extremely poor. I had one doll my whole life, a tidy doll. You put a little water in the mouth and it used to pee out the back. That was it. So, and that kind of generalized. I was loved, but according to my father's way of showing love. So based upon that, compared to what so many of my clients have gone through, which has been horror stories, when I think I've heard the worst story, the next one comes in that's worse than that one. So, you know, it's really what the damage that has been done to the child's mind and soul and spirit. And I was so glad that you include the higher power in your introduction to not only having a relationship with yourself, but also one with your higher power, because that's essential too. So children grow up in various forms of dysfunctional family systems, because every family, including my own, was dysfunctional to a greater or lesser extent. We all had dysfunction, like I said, to greater or lesser. That impairs the development of the mind of the child. There's a great video, I'm sure you've seen it, the still face experiment with a parent and a year old, where they have her playing with the baby in the high chair and talking and laughing and interacting and cooing. And then they ask the mother to turn away for a moment and come back and just not give her any animation, not give her any presencing whatsoever, just a still face. And then you see the baby become so uncomfortable and pressured and right. starting to cry. And basically, it was a wonderful metaphor for how important it is in relationships, grown-ups, to be present for each other, to be right. able to learn the landscape of our partner's face, to learn their language, mm-hmm. to get to really, really know who they are. And that's how you get to know who you are, too. It's really a teaching tool to my, you know, my children are my best teachers, mm-hmm. much better than my parents were. So, but of course, yes. you have to be open and committed to the process of learning about yourself and the other person as well.
Right. Right. And you mentioned a great thing that you talk about in the book just now. It's about being present.
Being present.
Yes. Presencing. Yeah. Because in her book, she also talks about, you know, this bridge, but you got to be present.
That's the first part of what I do when I see a couple. I spend maybe 20 minutes having them learn how to be present. And it's not easy.
No, it's not.
Very, very difficult, particularly for men, because I have them sit 18 inches apart. By the way, I want to mention Hedy Schleifer, who has been my last mentor. I have several mentors, beginning maybe with Virginia Satir all the way through John Bradshaw and Gottman and so many of them. And the last one was Hedy Schleifer, whose work was profound. She puts it all together. Mm-hmm. And I am not her, I'm myself, but I utilize all these wonderful modalities in the spirit of trying to help couples. So I spend at least 20 minutes teaching couples how to be the art of presencing.
Mm-hmm.
You sit in two chairs, about 18 inches apart, 44 centimeters. You look into each other's eyes. You take the hands, feet on the ground. She puts her legs into his. You hold hands. You feel the skin on each other because only the two people know that skin. Nobody knows it better. By the way, the skin is the largest organ, as we know, yes. in the body. And I have them gaze into the eyes of the other. That is the most amazing experience.
They can see into each other's soul, kind of.
It's exactly, because the eyes right. are the windows of the soul.
Right, right, right. It's the intimacy.
And so they don't have to speak, not a word. Just look into the eyes of the other and say with your eyes, not with words, thank you for showing up. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Just with your eyes, you have to have a warm eyes and an open heart. And you look into each other's eyes, hold each other's hands. And then after a few moments, I said, see if you can find the little girl inside your partner, about 7 years old. And of course, I say the opposite, see if you can see the little boy in your right. partner and what they might have looked like when they were 6 or 7 years old, and mm-hmm. focus on the child inside of them. And I do that. I have them focus on the eyes and stay in a state of presence for at least 5 minutes. And let me tell you, April, the guys are not comfortable. Their eyes are going up. Their eyes are looking at me. You know, and they're fidgeting. I said, and I have them to keep, I make them do it until they get it. It is in a nice way, of course. I don't force right. anything. Because the first thing I ask for when couples come to me, and I'm sure you do the same thing, you mentioned it a few minutes ago, I need a big fat yes from both of you, right. because I don't have any magic rabbits that come out of a hat or mm-hmm. any magic wand that make this better. You have to want this as much as you possibly can. And if you both give me a big fat yes, we can move forward. So basically I weed out couples who are not going to be successful from day one.
Right.
And you have to have the commitment. You have to have the, I want this to work. I know we're in a bad place right now, and our marriage is on the rocks, or we're on the cusp of the rocks, or we're especially going through this pandemic. My goodness.
Yes, especially.
It's been just raging. I mean, it's and back in April, they had a 36 or 34% higher in divorce rates back in mm-hmm. April. So that has created a lot of frustration and contentiousness in couples. But yes. the big fat yes is essential. You have to have that commitment. Are you with me? Are you going right. to be with me? Are you going to be with each other? So with right. that, we can move forward. Mm-hmm. And that is the art of presencing. Once you get that, I can move to the next step. But I need them to understand that we start every session out with a few moments of taking a deep breath, of feeling your feet on the floor, feeling grateful that you're alive and that you're with each other and that look who's here, you know, look who showed up, you know?
Yes.
So it takes a few moments to do that, more than a few moments. I would say at least five minutes of just getting centered and getting present. And then we move on from there.
Right. And one of the things that it's very interesting in your book is for couples. I mean, and after she says, you know, they're being present, she actually helps couples walk over through a bridge, which is really impactful on how you do that in dealing with all their hurts and pains. But so talk a little bit about that. I don't want to give it all away because I want people to read the book. But I just think that bridge part was very important in helping couples overcome a lot of stuff that's happening in their relationship.
Well, that's part of Hetty's work. I took the 3-year master class with her, and there were therapists from all over the world that attended. We met twice a year for 5 days each time for 3 years. And we have that colleague, a relationship, a friendship with those people that never went away because we have that strong connection through Hetty Schleifer. Basically, what she was saying and what I'm going to say too is that they're three invisible connectors. One is the relational space that we talked about that has become polluted over time that we have to try to make sacred once more. And the second is the bridge. It's an imaginary bridge going from my neighborhood to your neighborhood. So that is essential, and that's a very profound part of the therapeutic process. And you have to talk and teach. It's a process where you do teaching as a therapist. So there is imaginary bridge that whoever is the visitor, if we're going from the bridge to the third invisible connector, which is the encounter. And there's a person between the two partners. One is the visitor and one is a host. And so you have to imagine that there's a bridge between, it's called a brain bridge, actually, in neurobiology, that's what it is.
Right.
That you're going to leave your neighborhood and everything that's in there, your conceptions, the way you think about things, your perceptions, everything has to stay on your side, which gives you a completely open mind. You have to have none of your own stuff with you. And I act, you know, as the customs agent, but I hear something coming over from one side and that doesn't belong across the other side, I stop them and I say, where is that coming from? They tell me, oh, my side, take it back. And the other person is the host. And if it's a she, let's just say, it could be either one. They choose what they want to be. It's up to them to decide who wants to host and who wants to be the visitor. Once that's established, then I give them the direction and the guidance of each. So let's just say it's a him that's a visitor to visit her. She says, I'll be the host. He says, okay, I'll be the visitor. It's not always that easy. Sometimes they both want to be the host and they both want to be the visitor. So I said, choose what would be in the best benefit, the best interest of your relationship. And I let them think it through. Okay, I'll be the host. All right, I'll be the visitor. So once that's established, I give them directions as the host in a very economical word. It's an economy of words. No more than 5 to 8 words. And then the host would say, let's say his name is Alan. Alan, I would like to invite you to cross the bridge and come to my neighborhood. Down a street called, and she has to fill in what that street is. Anything she wants. It could be fear, anxiety, loneliness, anger, whatever she wants to call it. So it sounds like this. Alan, I'm inviting you over to my neighborhood to visit me at a street called anger, let's say.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, and you don't need a lot of words. Very little dialogue. Right. Very little dialogue. And his response as the visitor says, what I heard you say is you're inviting me over to your neighborhood down the street called anger. Am I with you? The am I with you is very important. And she says, yes. And he said, I'm coming over. And I let him know, when you get to her neighborhood and you've left yours completely, just let her know I'm here and I have all the time in the world.
Right. She's not alone.
It started out like that. And then it goes on. And she would say no more than 5 to 8 words about her anger. I get angry when I hear you or when I see you come home drunk, let's say.
Right.
That's enough. And then he has to repeat, what I heard you say is that you get angry when I come home drunk.
And when he repeats, he is actually entering into her world.
That's exactly right. And he doesn't always get it right, you know, and you don't expect them to because they don't know how to listen. Not just because it's a he, it could be a she too.
Right.
People are not really, they're not really good listeners. They want to respond before they even hear what you have to say. There's a lot of talk over. And when you're in a normal, or when you're in a session that's just talk therapy, you're like a person as a therapist just watching a tennis match. And nothing gets done.
Right, exactly.
So it's a very, very organized process that has to be followed structurally the way it's devised. So it's, you have to teach. There's a lot of teaching involved. Okay. And I sit between them. So there's, the couple is face-to-face, 18 inches apart. And I sit right perpendicular next to them. And if I suspect that he's bringing something over, like, well, you get me angry too. You know, I said, wait a minute, where's that coming from? So there's, I'm teaching awareness, I'm teaching listening, I'm teaching respect. And a lot of skills are being done that have never been taught. And when you grow up in your own dysfunctional family.
Right, right. Because they don't teach about relationships or intimacy when you're growing up. You just look at from whatever you see and you base, you know, your own stuff on that. We're going to take another short break. But in this break, Joan, I would love for you to let our audience know about all your services, what you do, and everything that you bring to the table to help all these couples out that you've been doing for 40 years. And so people know how to reach you in case they're struggling too.
Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead.
Now?
Yeah, now. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, you can reach me on my website, which is Joanie Childs, J-O-A-N-E, Childs, C-H-I-L-D-S.com. And I provide, individual and couples counseling both. And I do some intensives where I work for more than a day, sometimes 2 days and sometimes 3 days, with either a couple or individuals, and which is intense therapy. It's mass time therapy. Right now I'm doing mainly what you're doing, I'm sure, virtual therapy, which is online, and on most of my sessions are on Zoom. In addition to that, I do a lot of speaking also on Zoom, because everything is virtual now. We have to accommodate to the pandemic. I've got one coming up from New Zealand very shortly on the 13th, and one on the 19th from Singapore. So I'm on radio, but I have an office. I have a home office now. I closed my main office because I haven't been there since March. So people can find me online on Zoom, and you can certainly get me through my website. I write a lot of blogs on relationships, and all you have to do is go on my website and click on blogs, and you'll be able to read all the articles that I write. I think I covered the gamut, April. Is there anything else that I left?
I think you did. Yes, yes. If you guys need to reach out to her, definitely go to her website at www.joaniechiles.com. Yes. So, and if anybody's out there listening and they have questions, please feel free to call in at 888-627-6008. Now, we do have some questions that people have asked concerning this whole topic here, Joan. And so one question I have from Susan from North Carolina is, she is married to an alcoholic.
Wow.
And she doesn't know what she should do, just because the drinking is getting so much that she feels very being abused. But she also has children, and he provides for her. And she really wants to go to therapy, but she doesn't even know if that can help.
Oh, well, let me answer that part first. Absolutely, it can help, because this is a struggle that it's very difficult to do alone without the support of some kind of a professional. So I would strongly urge you to get some therapy so that you have at least somebody that has your back and that can help you set boundaries and not to be codependent with the drinking. And certainly no therapist, at least none that I know, I'm sure you feel the same way, would support a relationship where there is abuse. That's something that I don't do. I cannot support a relationship where there is abuse. The last thing you want to do is become his policeman, you know, to check out the bottles and to be responsible for his behavior, because that only reinforces the codependency. It's a difficult situation when you're dependent on money and also having children. I'm divorced with 5 children. My ex-husband was not an alcoholic, but he was an inveterate gambler. And when you gamble, you really have to support it, so you can do nefarious things to do that.
Right.
And I was not willing to sacrifice my life and my children's life for all the things that he did on an unconscious level, because it was an addiction, like all addictions. So I would support you in getting a therapist so you can learn to set boundaries. And not, and even with the concern about the fact that he supports you and he's a good provider, the law is a good support system also, and it's equitable distribution, so you will not be left out in the cold. It's scarier than it actually is. It feels scarier than the reality of it is, but you will be taken care of by getting a lawyer, and if you have to get a divorce. Children that come from unhappy homes are worse off than children that come from divorced homes, where at least one parent is happier and feels free. So there, you know, and I support people who are in marriages where their spouses are in addiction, to try to work through it first to see if they can get the help. But if you can't accept it, then you have to change it. If you can't change it, then you have to leave it.
Right, definitely. Thank you for answering that question. We have another one from Leslie from North Dakota. And Leslie says she's been told that she's codependent. And she's wondering, and you just mentioned the word codependency. Tia, would your book be of any use?
Oh, I write about that in my book. It's all over the book. It's the famous C word.
Yes.
Yeah. Codependency seems to be sort of like a cultural thing that we're into, especially during all the addictions that we have. There's such a plethora of addictions from alcohol or drugs and spending money, working workaholics sexting and love addiction, pornography, just goes, I mean, just it's endless. Anything that you can't stop, you're addicted to. So the codependency was a term that came out of Melody Beattie back in a long time ago. And I think Hazleton, where you talked about recovery, it's sort of the person that's addicted to the addict,
right.
But it really transcends that also. It's when you feel that you can't really feel whole without the other person, and you're attached to that person, and that without that person your life is meaningless, and you can go into a depression, you have anxiety, you have sleepless nights, you either eat too much or you don't eat enough, and it's where you feel that you're not whole. And that's kind of like we talked about my other half.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 halves don't make a whole. You know, if you multiply one half by one half, you end up with a quarter. So the thing is codependence is really unto itself an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone that feels codependent also should get some professional help, because they have to learn to set boundaries and limits and protect themselves and grow up, reparent themselves, basically from that's the inner child work that we're talking about. I hope I answered your question.
You did. And one other question's come from Tanya from Seattle. And she says that, you know, during this COVID, basically we've been home. And so we've been eating a lot and that kind of stuff. And her husband told her that he's just not attracted to her anymore.
Oh. Well,
he wants out.
She has to really kind of look at herself again. This is where you do self-exploration.
Right.
And it's not uncommon that if he married, you know, that he didn't sign up for this. And if she, you know, has gained a lot of weight, she has to look at what she can do to try to lose the weight and take care of herself. This pandemic has created a lot more addictions than even before. We were already an addictive culture. Mm-hmm. Now it's been exacerbated because of the fact that we are kind of on lockdown or in quarantine.
Yes.
And also frustrated and anxious. When is this going to get over? We never expected it to be this long. And a lot of turmoil, a lot of frustration, a lot of resentment is built up. And eating is another addiction. It's another way out to calm ourselves, comfort food. I have many clients that are addicted to sugar and ice cream, and mm-hmm. they've been putting on weight. And the answer is, you know, to take care of yourself, learn to protect yourself and take care of yourself. Love yourself enough that not only does your husband love you, but that you love yourself. It's about self-love, self-care, and just making a decision that would be in your best interest. If you can't do it alone, get some help. There's plenty of help out there.
Yes,
I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did. Yes. So Joan, what makes a relationship work?
Well, there's I call them the three C's: cooperation, communication, and collaboration. Communication is the key to understanding, but most people don't know how to communicate effectively. This is where therapy, couples work, is so important. You actually have to teach people, like I told you a little while ago about the art of presencing, crossing the bridge, having the encounter. People don't grow up learning about this because most people come from dysfunctional families to a greater or lesser degree, and they only know what they know. And how did their parents resolve conflict? They probably never did, and they swept it under the carpet. And as the carpet grew, it began to look like the Swiss Alps. So they used anger or stonewalling or getting drunk or leaving the house or a lot more that I can't even mention right now. So the communication is the key to understanding. And if you don't have good communication skills, you really need someone like a professional therapist to be able to teach them to you, not just you, but your spouse also, your partner also. And you have to have the same thing, the commitment, the collaboration, the willingness to stick it out, to learn how to do it. It's just like learning how to swim. You can read 100 books on how to swim, but you're never going to learn how to swim till you get in the water. And there's a zillion books out there. They're all good. My book mm-hmm. is great. I mean, it's terrific, but it's not the end all be all. You have to have an experience, which is where therapy comes in, to go in there. And this is the best investment you can make in your life, because right. it's how to preserve and protect yourself and your relationship. So, and it's one more thing I want to say about it, that it's important, is really to remember what it felt like when you first fell in love. It's hard over the years, but there was a time that you stood under something when either a rabbi or a priest or a minister was letting you express your vows, you know, and those vows had to have meaning. Right. If you can go back to what it was like to look and gaze in the eyes of your bride or your groom.
Yes.
With the kind of, you never get married thinking, well, if it doesn't work out, I'll get a divorce. Well, some people do, but most of us don't. And so you had a time that you were in love. And over the years, that relational space became contaminated, polluted. So we have to learn how to be grateful for having each other, to be kind mm-hmm. to each other, to be gentle to each other, to realize that we only have this one life. And it's right. a short one, you know. And so we want to make the most of that. What really matters. You know, many of us grew up not feeling that we mattered. We didn't have a secure attachment. We mm-hmm. think that somebody's going to give it to us. But all we're doing is rehashing what we didn't have
right.
into the relationship. So that's a very loaded question, April. There's so many answers to that. I'm sure you can add more to mine. But it's a good question. And we should all ask ourselves that question and find the answers. Certainly, we know that we're smart enough to know what we want. And if we're not getting it, we have to find out why not.
Right, definitely. Thank you so much for answering that question and stuff. And one of the things that I want to say to our audience, and even to compliment you on, is that you've been in the field for so long that it's really good when people read this book that they see the different understandings of couples.
Yeah. Well,
yes. And you use different analogies and stuff, so it can appeal to a variety of people. And also in the sense of they determined to go into therapy, It talks about some of the great therapists in there and philosophers, of course, too.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say to everyone out there that if you ever thought of leaving the man or woman that you love, the one who can drive you to orgasm and anger in the same day, this book is essential reading, I think. And there's many, many wonderful books out there. And I'm sure that what you're going to read in my book, maybe you read in somebody else's book. But this is my, it's kind of like what somebody asked me, why did you do this? Because it really, writing a book is the easiest part of it. It's getting it out there. It's marketing. It's doing what I'm doing today with you that's hard. It was a big investment emotionally, a big investment financially, and time-wise. I put a lot of effort into it. And somebody said, why did you do it then? I mean, you're 81 years old. I turned 81 this year.
Oh, congratulations. You look wonderful. Amazing.
Thank you. So the point was, is that I wanted to impart what I felt was so important, that I had knowledge that I wanted to share with the world. And, you know, I wanted to give back to the universe what the universe had given to me. So I didn't really have a conscious choice in doing it. It was interesting because I didn't even think, why am I doing this, until someone asked me.
Right.
It was kind of a muse that was in me that was really, compelling me to go to the computer and just, my fingers were typing and I wasn't even aware of what I was writing, but it was all this wonderful stuff that was coming out. And so I just, you know, I just feel that it's so important if we want to maintain a healthy relationship and we want to really know what the tools, the resources, the skills are to use. This book really says that it's the essence of my whole book. And it's important for couples who want to maintain that love and clean out that polluted space. That's what they'll get out of this. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to share this with everyone who's listening to you. You're amazing.
Okay, thank you. And the copy of a book, I mean, this is what it looks like. I Hate the Man I Love, A Conscious Relationship and Your Key to Success. Please definitely check it out. You can go onto her website at www.joanechiles.com. Her book, I got it on Amazon, but I'm sure it's all over the place.
Right, all your favorite bookstores.
And all your favorite bookstores, definitely. And you can check her out on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just look her up, Joan E. Childs. Thank you so much for being on the show. We really do appreciate you. And you're welcome back anytime, Joan, to give us your insight and your information on relationships.
Thank you so much for having me. I wish you a happy holiday and be safe.
Yes, thank you. What's your question?
I was just wondering if I was going to get a copy of this so I can have it.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You definitely have a copy of this, of the show. Yes, definitely. And so this has been the Bringing Intimacy Back show. Thank you, guys. If you guys like us, find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, find us on Spotify, like us, follow us on YouTube. We really would love to hear your feedback, and we're creating some different things and stuff. And just like she was saying earlier about her book, about this, her, that being an unconscious thing for her to just do to help out the world. This is kind of, the show is kind of what I'm trying to do, just provide information for all you guys out there and for relationships. And I will see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks again.